This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's rock and roll comedian Don Jameson, and you are tuned in right now to the heaviest, girthiest podcast, Brutally Delicious. Oh my goodness. There we go.
Excellent.
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. No complaints here at all. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, here we go. That's a little better. Yeah. All right.
You've been staying pretty busy then, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Been doing a lot of press for the record, and comes out Friday finally. So one more week of the grind here, and hopefully we sell a couple copies.
So I'm gonna just jump right in, because I was listening to it again just as I'm prepping for this, and I'm kind of curious. You address it in a lot of your stuff, the woke culture. Do you concern yourself with any of that at all when you're putting this together, or you just don't give a fuck?
Well, it's not that I don't give a fuck, but you know, you gotta laugh at a lot of the stuff that's happening, Bruce. You know, I mean, I turn the TV on, man. I'm like, I'm in a rage in like less than 3 minutes.
So right. And I feel like I'm in a Twilight universe sometimes, right? A whole different, like, where am I?
Yeah. But you know what? But I don't want to be the guy that goes on stage, and I don't want to be the old man, like, you know, yelling, get off my lawn. You know, I'm trying to make sense of things like everybody else is. So hopefully I do it in a humorous way. But it's my take on things. And, you know, my crowd is kind of old school anyway, you know, and obviously a lot of rock and rollers come and see me. And I always say, you know, the rock crowd's the best, because they're never politically correct. So,
Don't give a shit. Right.
Yeah. And listen, you know, as well as I do, man, the best music and the best comedy is when it's dangerous. You know, that's why people got into rock and roll, because it made their parents angry. You know, they were like, no, that's the devil. Music, and of course that made you want to listen to it even more. So, you know, I feel the same way with comedy, man. If you have a little element of danger to it, man, it's, you know, people are attracted to that. They're tired of all this hypersensitivity now.
Yeah, and I guess when you could turn on the news and you've got enough material to write for the next record, it writes itself almost, right?
It's hard to be absurd, Bruce, these days. It really is. I write stuff down. I go, that's literally just what I watched. How do I find different absurdity in this? But that's where you have to sort of take everything, is to the next level of absurdity. So that's what I try to do on the record, you know, and everybody that I pick on, every group that gets hit, you know, and I get hit more than anybody on the record, but I want those people to laugh at that. I want people to be able to laugh at themselves. You know, that's what you come in. That's why we go to concerts. You know, that's our escape. You know, I'm not going to go up and preach to people, but I'm going to let them know what's on my mind. Cause otherwise I got to pay for therapy, and I don't have that kind of cash.
So that brings me to my next question then. So I know bands are playing aggressive music or whatever. It's very cathartic for both the musician and the listener. Do you find that same thing in the comedy sort of genre? Do you find it cathartic getting that shit out?
100%, Bruce. I mean, I say it all the time. I used to say kidding around, and then I realized during the pandemic how true it was, which is, it doesn't matter how big you get as a comic or how successful I get. It's how much I save on therapy, because I do. It's very therapeutic. And during the lockdown, when we couldn't go to concerts and get a rage out, when I didn't have a stage to get on and scream and yell, my mental health suffered. It really did. So, it's a savior for me. And like I said, I know the value of laughter, you know, and so, you know, when I get on stage, I just want people to laugh and have a good time.
When you're putting yourself together, a lot of it's very personal as well, coming from inside you. Do you find that you've put too much of yourself into it and you're too vulnerable and you go, shit, I can't really put that out there? Or do you just go for it?
You know what? If they laugh at it, Bruce, it stays in the act, you know, but it's got it. You got to be, you know, comics are such a strange breed. Again, you know, you can also make the comparison with musicians. Like, we're, you know, we're very confident and sometimes cocky and obviously a bit narcissistic to think I can go into a room and make all these people laugh, or, you know, I can get up on stage and play my guitar and make everybody go crazy. But, you know, we also have this super sensitive side to us. And, you know, that if you don't have that vulnerability, then it's hard to be a fully rounded artist. You've got to tap into that, as painful as it is sometimes, you know, to reveal something about yourself, you know, in such a personal way. But yeah, it's just part of the gig, man. I love it.
I was just curious if you ever got to the point where you were like, ah, shit, I shouldn't have said that. Or, you know, my mom's watching or my cousin's watching and now they're going to, but that's not really an issue.
Bruce, I tell you, man, you touched on something here that, you know, when I first started doing stand up and I told my parents and they came to see me, and now look, granted, I, you know, my material was not great back then, but I'd been doing it about 4 years and it was coming together a bit. But when they came the first time, Bruce, I took all the personal stuff out and I bombed. It was terrible because I wasn't being myself on stage. I was being a sanitized version of what I usually talk about for the sake of my parents. And they were just sort of like, oh, are you sure about this career choice? And I'm like, no, I go, come, you know, come see me again and it'll be different. And it was probably about 3 years later, they came and saw me again. And I did everything, Bruce. I talked about masturbating. I talked about sex with everything you could possibly talk about. And I destroyed the room and they left going, all right, you should do this. And I go, they were embarrassed by some of the stuff, but they respected that, you know, that I gave 100%.
Right. And didn't back off on it or hold throttle it. Right. No, I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah. Cause my dad, you know, my dad is, he climbed telephone poles for a living, Bruce. So he tried my whole life growing up for me to work with my hands, you know, but my brain doesn't work mechanically. It works more abstract. So I never learned to work with my hands like my dad did, but what he instilled in my brain was the blue collar work ethic. And that's where really those worlds clicked in for me. It was that time where I go, no, what would my dad say right now? If he wasn't going to be in the audience, he said, you go to your job and you give 100% every time and you kick ass. And you know what? If you don't like the gig, you never have to do it again, but you better, if you accept something, you do it full force. So that blue collar work ethic always has stayed with me, you know. So that's at least that part of his personality rubbed off on me. You know, I can't rub two sticks together. I can change light bulbs. That's about it. My brain is not wired that way. So, but those worlds really, in this business, you have to have a blue collar work ethic to make it. You got to be in it to win it, you know.
Comedy's been on my bucket list for like 100 million years, and I've taken courses and done it. And I was talking to our mutual friend Todd from Queensryche, and he was telling me about the, I guess it was Monsters of Rock, where you helped him tweak his comedy routine for the boat that day.
Yeah, Todd, you know, it's so funny, Todd, because, you know, Queensryche is seen as a very serious band, and Todd, you know, is great in interviews, but he kind of keeps it on he kind of keeps it chill on the level. But what people don't know about him that you and I know about him is he's a really, really funny guy. And I remember when I finally got to know him pretty well, he emailed me out of the blue and he goes, hey, I wrote this bit. I want you to tell me what you think about it. And it was really funny. And when he talked on the phone for like an hour, and I was like, wow, you can get inside the comic's head. I mean, you kind of know, like, you have an instinct for it. And I said, you know, we do this thing on the Monsters of Rock cruise called Punchlines and Backlines, where, you know, it's three professional comedians and a musician doing stand-up for the first time. And he was down with it. So yeah, I knew he was going to do great because, like I said, he's got a comic sensibility, yeah. You know, when his guard is down, and he killed it. He was so good. He was so great. His instincts were perfect. And yeah, I'm proud of the guy, man. I hope he's going to do it again because I think he had a really good time.
Yeah, I remember now, brought the whole place down. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it really is like when we work with, you know, because we did it, Kip Winger did it, and Red Beach did it, and Chris Kale from Five Finger Death Punch, who, by the way, has been secretly, although now it's not going to be a secret, right? He's been secretly doing stand up like on the down low while Five Finger has been off the road. So, you know, it's stayed with him, like it's gotten into him, you know, and that's what I always tell people, like, just try it once, you know. You may not want to do it again, but at least you'll know. And so Chris has been doing it, and he's getting really good at it. So yeah, I want to get Latorre back out there. You know, when he has some time, I might have to take him on the road and come do some shows.
Great.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than hey? Well. That's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I know he's said the same thing to me. You need to just get out and do it. And he sent me a message once, and he's like, are you just going to go do it? Just take the first step. And I haven't gotten the balls to, you know, it's all written, it's all done, it's practiced, but there's that. Well, you know, there's that thing. You probably go through it every night, right? You step out and go, fuck, I don't know if this is going to work.
That's the crazy thing, Bruce. See, you got inside the comic's mind. I mean, so just do it. Just like Nike says, just do it, because then you'll never regret it. Do it once and you might go, hey, I'm never doing it again, but I'm glad I did it. But it is, man. Every show is a new show. You're always starting over because even the biggest comics, you know, I came up doing spots, you know, and I still work in New York City at the clubs, not as much as I used to. But back in the day, I used to see big comics come in and bomb, you know, trying new material. And it's like, if Seinfeld could bomb, you know, anybody could bomb. You know, you could have 100 great shows in a row, and then there's always a crowd waiting around the corner to take you down a few pegs, man.
I've always got that thing in my head.
That's the one you remember.
Right. But I always got this thing in my head, and you probably do as well, like, if you don't do well, those are the longest 10 minutes of your life, right?
Well, you know, I headline, so imagine 45 minutes to an hour.
Right. Did you ever imagine you'd still be doing this, however many years later, 40 years later, 35 years later?
Oh, no. Well, I'm in year 24, but I'll tell you this, man. I just said, look, I want to, as soon as this is not fun, I'll stop. So obviously I'm still having fun. And you go through ebbs and flows, and you know, you do go through some times where you start questioning it. But the one thing I could never obviously have predicted is, you know, when I started the comedy specials were just starting like on HBO, but you kind of had to be, you know, already pretty established. And
right.
Other than that, there was like the late night talk shows and SNL and I didn't really fit in there. You know, with those comics, and those are all great comics. I just, you know, Letterman liked the weirdo guys, and you know, I wouldn't even know how to audition for the Tonight Show when Leno was doing it. And I don't do characters or impressions, so I knew SNL wasn't right. But the thing that was right is finally came along, and that was, you know, doing that metal show with two of my best friends. You know, it's like, but I could have never predicted that after the first time I did stand up, like, okay, one day this will lead to the two worlds that I love the most colliding,
right.
Heavy music and comedy.
And then it created a trajectory that you can still follow now, right? I mean, that metal show is gone, but you're still the metal comedian.
Yeah, I wear proudly on my sleeve and still, you know, obviously, you know, my podcast is dedicated to rock music. And Jim and Eddie and myself have been doing That Rocks on YouTube, so we're still supporting heavy music like we used to, and also I go out on the road and open for bands, which is a, you know, that's a whole other, you know, big part of my career now, which is so crazy, but I really love it.
But it works. It works.
Generally,
rather than
it does.
Like
Bruce,
some, yeah.
I mean, Well, I would say, no, I was going to say, like when I do it, I create an entire act just to open for bands, like separate from my nightclub act. That's just all bands, musicians, music-based comedy. Like I'm not going out there going, hey, who's got kids here? Like it's, that's weird if a comic comes out and does their regular act. Like you got to come out swinging. You got, when I open for a band, I'm talking about Alice Cooper and Black Sabbath and Ozzy and Metallica and Iron Maiden. So, so it's not so weird. Yeah, it's wild. It's almost a different skill set because you sort of got to ramp up the intensity. You got to really change up the material. And in the club, I can like relax a little bit more, take my time, do a wider variety of stuff. But I love it because I get to, get on a bus with a bunch of guys and be one of the brothers. Out on the road, like conquering. All right, we're gonna kick ass in Kansas City tonight, and then tomorrow we go to Denver. And I get the brotherhood of being in a band, but I get none of the drama of it because it's just,
Just
when
you,
they're all
right?
fighting, I'm just me. Hey, I'm just the comedian. Leave me out of this.
Right. You planning on taking this on the road?
Well, I'm always, pretty much on the road, every weekend, either local gigs or, flying out. I just was in the Cleveland area this past weekend doing shows at one of my favorite clubs. So I don't have any band tours lined up as of yet, but stuff's always in the works.
Also, I wanted to tell you, listening to the record here, Herd's Turds Candle is the one that stuck with me, and I almost spit my coffee out again this morning drinking it. That's brilliant.
Well, thank you, man. I'm really flattered, by the way, that almost everybody that I've spoken to that got an advance of the album actually listened to it, and that really makes me feel good because the response has been super positive. So I get it. I don't expect everybody to listen to the record, so I appreciate that you did, man. I really do. That means a lot.
Yeah, so it's the second or third time I listened to it when I first got it, and then this morning prepping, drinking my coffee, and I knew what was coming, but that bit is just really funny. I mean, it's all funny, but that bit really got me. The Gwyneth one, right?
Yeah.
Gwyneth
Well,
gangbang and
the
phony
through line,
celebrities.
it real. Yeah. Well, you got to make the track titles funny because you know how 80% of your sales are going to be, online, right? On the streaming services, and people cherry pick tracks. So if you can make the track title funny, people go, oh yes, I want to hear what's that Gwyneth Paltrow finger banging, what, whatever, they want to buy it. So I try to at least make those interesting too.
Excellent. Don, that is all I had. I hope it wasn't too bad.
No, I appreciate it, Bruce. This has been a great conversation, man. I hope I didn't bore any of your
No,
viewers
I'd
or
like to just
listeners,
talk.
but
So we have a, you know, I
yeah.
usually have a checklist of things I want to cover, but I also just like to get in and talk and see where it goes. So I think it was great.
All right, before we go, what Sebastian Bach coming into back into Skid Row, yes or no?
I don't know. I don't think Lizzie Hale is the way. I think that's a bad move.
Okay. Fair. Well, I like her as the fill-in for sure.
Yeah, but I don't think she's, I wouldn't go on and I don't think I'm buying records with Skid Row and Lizzie Hale.
Right. It was sort of like when
I don't have anything against her. I like her stuff. I don't think
Oh,
she's Skid
yeah.
Row. I'm old school Skid Row, like from the first album I saw them out on Long Island at like the Salty Dog or something in this tiny little place when it used to exist. And so old school Skid Row. And yeah, I would love to see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes sense. I mean, they're both sort of in need of each other, I
Yeah.
think.
Yeah. Well, let's see if they can, I mean, I know they tried it like 4 years ago or something, and they couldn't even get to the first show. So to think that they could go out for a year or two now, maybe the 4 years, maybe the time passing helped. You never know, but
It
we'll
would be
see.
stellar. And
Yeah.
I'm front row. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Don, it's always a pleasure talking to you, man. Good luck with the record. And I live in Richmond, so I don't ever see you down here this way. But if I ever get up to New York and catch you somewhere.
Yeah, I haven't been. The last time I was down your way, Virginia Beach, when I was opening for the Dead Daisies. But that's the closest. Yeah, I got it. I'm working with a new agent now, so I'm gonna be getting to more places. So hopefully, but of course, if you want to come, you know, email me and you'd be my guest wherever I am.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. Good luck with the record. Thanks for your contribution to the music world, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's an honor. Trust me.
Be well. Cheers. So long. Bye.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.